And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling,
mean and angry.
Hear that co-host shouting,
it's Daner and Jay.
All right, welcome in to Hear That Podcast, Growlin, Paulina Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you on an off day for the Bengals on Thursday as they take a little 24-hour hiatus from camp and get right back to it this weekend. Jay, how we doing?
Doing well. Always appreciate an off day.
But it's not really.
It's not. We're here.
We're here. I'm as busy today as I am the other day. I don't go down to the stadium and have to do all of the things down there. Instead, I'm just doing things in different places, and that's fine. We got some good stuff to bring you, but there's a lot to talk about. The Bengals are a hot topic, for a number of reasons. The number one being Joe Burrow. And so we're going to get all into that here. You came here for it. You knew we were going to talk about it. So we're going to give you everything we've got on that. Of course, we have a couple different stories up about what we've seen from Joe Burrow through the first week that have, shall we say, caught some national funnels on the internet. But if you want to, you can subscribe, of course, at The Athletic. We still have limited time offer. 50% off annual subscription deal is going on right now. So if you want to go in and read everything we have up, there's a ton of it there. You can do that now. Plus everything across our hundreds and hundreds of writers across the country and in other countries. So we're going to get into that. We have your questions. We got thank you, everybody, that sent us a bunch of questions on Twitter. We're going to breeze through a bunch of those on a ton of different non-Burrow topics, as we'll cover that first. Jay, do you have a bar bet for me?
I do. I was looking up some stats relative to Ja'Marr Chase, and I was quite surprised by the results. And it kind of seemed familiar because – of T. Higgins last year. It has to do with rookie wide receivers in their first game. But the results were so surprising that I don't think that I had these stats last year. I'm pretty sure they're new, and I guarantee you can win a bar bet. Any of you can win a bar bet once I tell you this answer.
Love that. We'll get to that once we get done talking about Joe Burrow. Let's start here. Let's just dive right in. So it hasn't been great through the first week. We've seen a couple of days, really Friday, Monday, and Tuesday. And a Saturday was the fan fest in the stadium, and it was okay. I wasn't there for that. Jay was. But for the most part, what we've seen is a defense that has dominated and a passing offense that has been really unable to do anything. And we've seen Joe Burrow not look super comfortably back there yet. And that, you know, the reporting of that, I think, sent people all into a tizzy, but we're just reporting what is going on. I mean, this is what's happening, and not saying that it's, We have not reached sound the alarm season. Okay, we've been hitting on that. We're still early. He's played one practice in full pads, and when we're 1 week in, but you know it hasn't looked great, and we're trying to be honest with you about that. I mean, on Tuesday he was 5 of 12 with a pick, and you know only one throw of more than 10 yards, completion of more than 10 yards. I mean, really, it was just everything downfield has been knocked down by a couple of defenders or just harmlessly kind of falling out of the way. You know, Jay, I mean, it just seems like it just hasn't been kind of what you all and everybody came to expect from Joe Burrow over the course of the time that we've seen him.
It hasn't, but there, I mean, there are mitigating circumstances,
yeah.
Quite a few, actually. The first of which is in OTAs, they didn't do any 11s. He didn't face any defense. So he's behind in that regard. You would normally have a few more of these reps and work out some of the kinks in OTA. So he's starting from scratch in that regard. The other thing, maybe the most important, you brought this up. We were talking Monday or Tuesday, and then Zach touched on it in his press conference yesterday. And some people might roll their eyes and think it's an excuse, but it is legit that this is the install period. He's not allowed to check out of plays. Whatever the play is, it's called, they're going to run it, no matter what the look from the defense is. And that's a big deal. That is one of Joe Burrow's strengths, you know, recognition, just like Andy Dalton, that pre-snap recognition, knowing where to go with the ball. That's not happening right now. So we need to kind of pump the brakes a little bit on he's not the same guy until they can start doing that. And then the third one is, you know, the practice that we most recently wrote about, Joe Burrow's most recent practice, he had four backup offensive linemen and Jonah Williams. And the one before that, he had three backup linemen. Riley Reiff practiced in that until very late, got dinged. But the two guards and Billy Price was at center. Those are not the guys, we don't think, that are going to be the starters. So how much of it is the pressure? How much of it is the knee? How much of it is just getting used to throwing again? There's just so many things that play into it. It's noticeable, and it needs to be reported, but it you're right. No one should be pushing the panic button yet. This is all part of the process. We're still 30 some days from September 12th. That's the finish line, not the first day of practice, not the first day of camp.
Jay, I have been blamed on the internet for being responsible for national people ripping on the Bengals. This is my fault, right? This is my fault. Because I wrote about what was happening and what was happening before my eyes, including in there that this, no one's saying this isn't going to turn around soon. In fact, it's probably going to. But nobody cares about that. Nobody actually reads the whole thing. Everybody just took the screenshot of the Burrow down, explaining what had happened and saying that this is just what happened on Tuesday. This is where it is. And turned it into... We relitigated Chase Sewell, relitigated the entire front office. I mean, everyone's calling him Carson Wentz. The Herbert people showed up. The Tua people are involved. What is happening? Like, this is just about what happened over the last few days. It has been ugly. It has not been what you're used to seeing. That said, this is a guy coming off a ridiculously disgusting injury, a long rehab, having to stand in front of a rush for the first time since. Should he be comfortable? No. Brian Callahan told us before the season started at Mock Turtle Soup, this is going to be a process. It takes time to regain that comfort for anybody, specifically somebody coming off an injury. You want to create confidence in the knee. It's probably going to take the whole camp and preseason, was what he was saying before we ever got started in this. This is a process. And we're seeing that. We're seeing the rough early learning stages of that process. This is not sound the alarm. This is telling you we get spoiled, Jay. And this is my question for Zach Taylor yesterday, and one that I'm going to bring up to you in another interview here in a minute, was we get so spoiled by what Joe Burrow has been to this point. Joe Burrow has been the guy that blows every expectation out of the water. He's an adversity overcoming robot, and he has come in, and no matter what has been in front of him, whether it was no offseason, Nothing in person, no preseason, barely any practice with your teammates. Week one, yeah, by the end of it, he's leading a ridiculous two-minute drill that should have been the game-winning touchdown if not for a PI against AJ Green. Oh, yeah, you want to, you know, second game, you want him to throw 63 times, you know, and keep you up, keep up with the Browns offense? That's oh, yeah, sure.
No picks?
No picks. Oh, yeah, by the midseason of his rookie year with none of that offseason stuff, you want him to go a full month second in the league in points per drive with no rushing game to speak of along with it? Sure. Oh, you want him to get hurt and come back where in the offseason program he's out there where it's almost not a storyline? Come attack that injury rehab to the point that he's so far ahead of schedule where we're not even hardly talking about the fact that he should be ready to go against Minnesota. You get so used to this. We laughed about how it wasn't a storyline almost. You get so used to that that the moment you see him be almost human, it's surprising, right? And I think we do take that for granted because it's like you just expect him to be this robot. And I think what we have been exposed to is an important part of the process for him, which was going to be finding that comfort and that confidence and all of that. And that has happened before our eyes in real time, and we're watching it, and it hasn't been pretty. He has a long way to go in that regard. That's what we're reporting. It doesn't mean that over the course of the next 38 days, he won't get there.
One more thing, I mean, that great story from Bruce Feldman on him tweaking his throwing mechanics. You can do that all you want at a passing camp or a passing drill, but he hasn't done it in live situations. So there's that, too, that he's getting used to. He's getting used to the knee. He's getting used to the new mechanics. And maybe most significant of all, he's getting used to a defense that's playing really, really well. You can't discount how well those guys, the coverage has been. It's just there's so much. It's so layered what's going on right now. It is not just Joe Burrow is not the same. Like you said, you go back to Brian Callen. I almost kind of not scoffed at, but I was surprised by Brian's comments at Mock Turtle Soup saying that it's going to take 5 weeks for him to rebuild this confidence. It's like, what? It's Joe Burrow. He exudes confidence. That's what he's all about. There's no way it's going to take off 5 weeks, but you know, these coaches know these players better than anyone else. And it is. It's a process, and it's just something that, yeah, maybe what we're writing is getting to the national media and turning that narrative into this. But it's a blame the media society right now. If you say something that people don't like, it's your fault. It's not what's happening's fault. I mean, I'm surprised that weathermen don't get blasted when they issue tornado warnings because people don't like tornadoes. It's just that's just the society we're in now. People blame the media. It's not us. We're just reporting what we see. And as I said earlier, pump the brakes. It's early, and there's no reason to doubt Joe Burrow. He's overcome everything so far to this point at every level. Give it some time.
Have you ever seen the Nicolas Cage movie, The Weatherman?
No, I haven't.
There's a scene in it essentially where it's just like a montage of slow motion of people throwing things at him as the weatherman in the city, including like it's and he like bemoans when they throw the other big gulp at him, you know. I felt like the internet was throwing their big gulps at me yesterday. Like I look, I'm just telling you, like, this is just what I'm seeing. Okay. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Full disclosure here, I wanted to bring this out. I'm doing another story on the behind the scenes of Joe Burrow and Trey Hopkins rehab. That's going to be out soon, and keep that, you know, well, that's a story for and a conversation for another day. I'm really excited about it. The people I've talked to have been very helpful and great about it. I talked to Director of Rehab Nick Cosgray on Thursday. On Wednesday evening. And during that conversation, which most of it was about the course of their rehabs and really the interesting things that happened there and you know, their the pride in where they've how quickly they've gotten to where they've gotten, we started discussing the challenges with a guy like Joe Burrow when there's so much attention on it and how that makes it different. And when people like us and the media get involved, and yesterday, Tyler Boyd, during his interview session, said Joe's knee looks a little iffy. And or clearly he feels a little iffy, but it's hard to tell. That was kind of the quote. He kind of glossed over it in passing. Like, sure, if, you know, you see moments where maybe he's a little iffy on his knee. It wasn't, it certainly made everybody want to tweet it. But it wasn't some condemnation or whatever. But regardless, we were sort of talking about that, and this topic came up. And Nick said some really great things about where expectations should be for Joe in this process right now. And I just want to bring those to you. So here is myself talking with Nick Cosgray as we end up in the topic of where Joe should be and how we should be viewing and the perception that's happening from the outside. Here's Bengals Director of Rehab, Nick Cosgray.
And then obviously the, you know, some of the requests that come along when you're dealing with a guy, you know, oh, hey, can we film this part of his rehab? Can we do this? People are interested. People want to know, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes for guys like us, like, you know, myself, you know, Joe, we don't care, right?
Like, yeah. Yes.
I don't care that the people want to know how Joe's doing. I understand that side of it. But to me, you know, Joe and I, we know how he's doing and he's making progress. And, you know, I don't care that everybody needs to know what he's doing.
Yeah. So, well, it's funny. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much you guys even would laugh about this, but I knew the moment they showed him on like a Twitter video, even just walking into the building.
Yeah.
It was like everyone's analyzing his like slow motion gait. And I'm like, what? Can we just.
100%. Paul Sparling and I mean, we all talked about it and talked about it extensively with people here. We cannot film and release everything that we're doing because there are Twitter doctors and Twitter therapists and everything else out there that will sit there and crush us for what we're doing, even though we're doing everything correctly.
Yes.
You know, everybody wants to overanalyze everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure that somebody just came in and said there was a one of our players did an interview today and said something about Joe. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, it's all over, you know.
Yes.
He's not comfortable. Well, I mean, come on. Right. Who is comfortable when they're 9 months coming back from an injury like he had? Nobody's comfortable yet.
Yes.
It's a process. You get comfortable by doing it. So,
yes, exactly.
I understand you guys all have to do a job and you write things down, but sometimes I just wish people wouldn't talk to you.
Right. Well, it's funny because it's like, and that's where there's a lot of like having to, the question I asked Zach about this today, and I think it's relevant even to with you. It's like we get so used to seeing Joe like blow expectations out of the water. It's almost this like thing you take for granted. Like he showed up last year early on and was incredible, and then he's so good in the opener, and he's everything that's been put on his plate, and then where he's been at when we through the rehab, it's like it's like he's some adversity crushing robot, and then it's like so. You become surprised when he's human. Like, you know, it's like, it's almost like you take it for granted.
Here's the thing, Paul, is what are we looking at now that's saying that he's not, you know, still exceeding expectations?
Right.
Right. I mean, the guy is back out there on the field after a really significant injury, at, you know, prior to 9 months, and he's running around, he's cutting, he's throwing deep balls, he's throwing short balls. You know, he's a NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Right at less than 9 months after a significant injury. So, you know, I think everybody probably wants him to be completing every single pass, but, you know, whatever. I mean, I think that the He is where he needs to be at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
We have how many weeks before the season starts, and you know, I watch him out there and I think he is doing extremely well.
Yeah.
So, know, again, I understand that, you know, what I look at from him doing extremely well is probably different than what, you know, the public and media feel is doing well, not dominating our defense every day or whatever it is, you know, throwing touchdown passes every time he throws a ball.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you have to give credit to what he is physically able to do right now from what he's come from less than nine months ago.
Okay, so that was Bengals Director of Rehab, Nick Cosgrave. Again, I'm really excited to tell a story, sort of the background of the rehabs. You can look for that coming up soon. But in regards to this, as a sort of a side note of our conversation, I thought this was great perspective. You know, he's like, look, I mean, he's not a coach out there. He looks at it from a physical standpoint. This is the next process of his rehab, and we're watching it play out in real time. And I thought it was funny. He's like, I look at it. He still is the adversity overcoming robot out there right now. I mean, he's out there running and cutting and throwing deep and long and doing all those things. You do have to learn on the fly. And the only way it's the same respect of when you first start jogging on the knee. How does it look like the first day you start jogging on the knee or doing some form of slight cutting on the knee versus the seventh day you do some slight cutting on the knee or some jogging on the knee? It's different. You just, you get to that next level by doing. This is the final step of his process, is overcoming the mental and getting used to being out there in the live bullets again. And finding that confidence. This is that final step. And, you know, I thought Nick had some pretty good perspective on that.
Yeah, and it also goes down to basically every offensive football conversation ever, where the quarterback gets too much credit and too much blame. And it's not all these struggles that the offense is having in camp. It is not all Joe Burrow. There are guys dropping easy passes. There are guys, Jamar Chase, who are struggling to find separation against good and back of the roster DBs. There's so much more that goes into it, and it was really interesting of Nick to say that yes, he performance wise, moving the ball wise, it's not looked like it should have, but physically, what he's doing, he is so far ahead, and it just goes back to just have the patience. It will get there. You assume these guys are going to stop dropping these balls. They don't have a history of it. And you assume that things are going to start, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is going to get more comfortable with his routes, and it's going to start looking like it should. And for Joe Burrow to be, we were like the first practice at OTAs. It was so surprising to see how well he was moving that quickly. And then, like you said, it almost becomes a non-story because it's okay, he did it, it's over. That was so long ago, and you're still in that process of where he is building up to where he should be. Yes, they said the knee is 100% healthy, but there's still so much more that goes into that. I think that's a great conversation you had with Nick, a great get there, and great perspective that I think all fans should take into account when they're reading our accounts of what's going on in practice.
One more thing I want to bring to you is a little bit from our interview with Zach Taylor yesterday, and this was him discussing sort of the comfort level and his view of the passing game struggles, and I spliced up a couple different things together. The first couple questions of the press conference and the last couple, where at the end he tells us he's giving Joe Burrow the day off and explains why he did that, and we're going to discuss whether that was right or wrong when we get back, but I want you to hear his discussion of Burrow, where the passing offense is at, comfort level with the rush, and then, you know, how he's handling Burrow at this moment. So here's Zach Taylor from his Wednesday press conference on all things Burrow.
Zach, is the pass rush bothering Joe at all? Do you think it's in his head at all at this point, or is he handling it pretty well?
No, I think it's the whole unit right now. We're just getting a feel for each other, and you know, it's no, you'd like to be throwing touchdowns in every play right now, but we got some progress to be made, but there's no cause for panic for any reason for that. So we still got 39 days before our first game, you know, so we got a lot of practices left to be had. So I'm excited because we know that we can continue to get better and be more detailed, and that's going
to
come.
We get so used to expecting so much of Joe. I mean, it's like you just feel like he always goes above the expectations. It's unfair to expect somebody, considering all he's going through with the rehab, to show up day one and just be lighting it up. Would that have been an unfair expectation now, kind of?
You know, I try not to have those sorts of expectations, so people are entitled to do whatever they want to think coming into it. But again, it's our job to get certain guys ready for this first game and other guys ready for the first game of the regular season, you know. And so, you know, you look at Joe and DJ and Trey, and really our process is to get them ready for Minnesota on September 12th. There's a lot of other guys we're trying to get ready for next Saturday whenever we play against Tampa Bay. So there's different tracks guys are on right now. And I'm encouraged from what I see from Joe and what I meet with Joe. And again, we're going to complete more balls as we go forward. We all know that. So,
in one-on-ones and seven-on-sevens, the offense is having good moments. Is there something that has to happen to translate that to 11-on-11?
Well, I mean, let's give credit to the defense right now. They're playing better than they have in the last three training camps I've been to. You know, and that's just the confidence that they're playing with, the chemistry that they've developed over a short time, the understanding of the principles that we're employing. So you got to give credit to those guys. Those guys are making it hard on any offense right now. So, again, that's good for us because we're seeing – you're watching how sticky our DBs are. You know, it's hard to win right now against them because they're being competitive on short plays and down-the-field plays, and that's what I love to see as a head coach. So, again, it's exciting to watch our defense be able to play like that.
How do you think Joe looks in the pocket? So, with people around, you know, people around him.
Yeah, it, for all our quarterbacks, you know, it's just getting used to the pocket movement. We've been doing Skelly all spring, and you know, it's the first day in pads where guys are really coming off the ball and – tighten up the pocket, so I only expect that to improve going forward.
Is there anything you've seen from Joe, Zach, specifically, that you really like what he's doing at this stage?
Yeah, I think he's got
to. You only see the completion stuff, and that doesn't probably say really what's going on.
I mean, Joe's as expected. You know, we meet with him all day, and he's got great retention on what we're looking for in plays, even if we're installing it for the first time since the spring last fall. And so again, it's just those guys just getting work with each other and you know, putting the pads on is a little bit different for all of our guys. So, again, Joe's been on schedule. You know, with that being said, I've said up here many times, it's my job as the head coach to protect these guys coming off of injury. And so we'll rest Joe today, you know, because we got this 3-day burst next week. And so, again, as we sit down and talk, is what do we want from each of our players? We want certain guys ready for game one. We want other guys to feel great preseason game one. So we get a chance to work those other quarterbacks today and give him a day off so he can have a great 3 days next week.
Was that planned?
Just another minute or two, please.
Before the season, before you guys started, you would do that with the combo of days here?
There wasn't an exact plan in place on how every guy was going to look. So we just want to adjust. So today with the short yards go on emphasis, these backs are going to get a lot of work, you know, and so it's a good time to give a quarterback off and let some of these other guys work and hand the ball off and see these backs run and a couple live reps here against those defensive linemen and linebackers in that short yardage period. So again, just balancing what the emphasis on practice is and keeping those guys fresh off of surgery, you know, ready to go for next week.
The fact that it would be a back-to-back day off, is that any part of consideration?
There's a bonus there, you know, for all those guys. And, you know, one thing from Joe is he just wants to practice. He wants every rep he can get. And so if you ever leave it up to him, you're not going to get, you know, so it's my job to make sure I manage all those guys. And we've done that with Trey Hopkins. You know, Trey Hopkins wasn't in team yesterday. He'll be back in team today. Same thing for DJ Leader. We've really done a good job of managing him as well. So, again, we want to make these guys feeling great for next week and ready for week one against Minnesota.
How did Joe handle it?
Great. I mean, he wants the reps. He wants to be in there with the guys, continuing to gain chemistry with these receivers. So it's not something he wants to do, but he's not the head coach, so he doesn't get to make that decision.
All right, so there's Zach Taylor. You know, the decision to give Burrow the day off, I liked it. I think that's the right move. I think, well, first of all, there's a number of different things at play here, and he mentions a bunch of them. But, you know, you have the day off already coming on Thursday. We knew before any of camp started they were going to sneak in some rehab off-type days in for him. That, I mean, we did a run passer boot on how many there would be a week ago. And so it's like we knew these were coming. And was this one set as when they would do it? I don't know. I don't think they had – he says he doesn't really have a specific plan with that. Probably not, but when it's going the way it's going and you have a day that's going to be a lot, and it was a lot of just hard run game stuff and short yardage, why not use that as a chance to, you get 2 days in a row, a chance for Burrow to just get out of them. I mean, he's been frustrated, you know, I mean, we've seen it, we've documented it, you know, he threw the interception to Jermaine Pratt, on Monday. Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, before that, he was like tossing the ball out of bounds in frustration. He chucked one into the ground when a free runner came through. He, you know, and he throws the interception and you can sense it, you know. Ricardo Allen actually talked to us yesterday and talked about how he loves that, how mad Burrow's getting over it. Like, it, he's like, that's the stuff that the great ones have, is, you know, it's pissing them off and you know that they're going to, how much it matters. And, you know, you can see that. And it's like, you know what? Take a break, back away. It's early in the process. Focus on your rehab. Do that for a couple of days. Come back fresh for the 3-day burst. Cause that's what NFL schedules are. It's how they run when you get prepared every week. It's a 3-day practice burst and then you play. I like it. I thought it was a good move. I think it was needed there. You know, there was no need to go out there and push it when he was kind of obviously struggling to the point that he was.
Yeah, I thought it was a no-brainer. I was kind of surprised that Zach was as honest as he was about, you know, not necessarily say. He could have easily said this was planned and everyone would have taken him at his word. When he first said that he was going to work in some off days, and I wrote about that, I specifically mentioned, well, the perfect time for that would be a goal line short yardage day. You don't need Joe Burrow in there for those plays. And then for that to back up or to front end a off day, it just made all the sense in the world. You know, maybe he's just reluctant to say it was planned. It doesn't sound like that's the case. It sounds like this, it was just kind of a feel thing, but it made perfect sense. The timing was ideal to have this situation. Now you get 1 day in pads. We saw a little bit of it Saturday for the in the stadium thing. They gave him the morning walkthrough off and he looked much better. I mean, if you look at Friday, Monday, Tuesday, those practices were so bad. He actually looked fairly decent in that it didn't, he wasn't great Saturday in the stadium, but it looked a lot different than what we've seen in these other practices. So just that little bit of a break there, I think, played into that. So now you give him 2 full days off. It's going to be really interesting to see what he and what this offense look like as they get away from the strict installment portion of camp and can start kind of playing to a little more of his strengths.
And, you know, maybe his receivers can actually get some separation. You know, we just haven't seen much of that. Yeah. They have been blanketed, all of them. And, you know, here's the thing, and I'll end the conversation with this. And it's something I tweeted yesterday. If you'd have asked me before the season, what is one thing that you will place your biggest bet on with this team, you would say that Burrow, Higgins, Chase, and Boyd will be just fine. And I still feel that way. I this hasn't changed anything. I mean, are we going to go through a season where all of a sudden those three guys can't get separation when that's all they've done their whole life? When Higgins did it on this level last year, when Boyd's done it for 5-6 years now, where Chase was, you know, one of the most dominant receivers you've ever seen in college football, all of a sudden they're going to come up here and not be able to get open? There's just a lot going on, and that will come. I also, you know, we're going to get into the receivers a little bit more down the line, but I just think overall, and that was sort of Zach Taylor's end point yesterday, was this is not keeping me up at night. I know that's going to come. Like that, there's just those guys they care about it too much. They're too good. They're too talented for that to not come along. I think that's true. No, I do.
And they're not going to see nonstop press man. Once you get into the games, it's just, you can't play that. You can play that way in short bursts in practice, but you can't play that way for a whole game if you're on defense. It's I don't want to say it's apples and oranges practice in real game situation, but it is different. And it's just, there's concern is legitimate, but panic button is not. Just stay the course, Bengals fans.
That's important. It is concern. Keeping our eye on it. We're going to keep it under the microscope. It's a storyline. It's obviously insanely important, but it's about us monitoring the progress and the process. It's not about ringing the alarm. And I know that the anger from people throwing big gulps at me is about that the nuance is lost when it gets funneled up into the Nationals. I cannot control people's inability to read and people's inability to understand there's more to a story than that. And I can't control Twitter doing what it does. You never will. It is going to be a very angry cesspool all the time. Okay? Like, that's what it is. And guess what? National media is going to continue to talk about this organization like this at every turn possible until they win some damn games, because that's what they do. That's what they have always done to not just the Bengals, though they're the easiest one, but any team when they continually stink, is beat the dead horse and take the shots and be the butts of jokes. That's how this show operates, unfortunately, but that's what it is. So Bengals fans shouldn't need to be told this, but you need thick skin to be following this team. So you might want to find it and understand that you know the truth, and that, like, you know, like Nick Cosgrave said, that Joe and Nick know the truth and nobody else needs to know what's really going on, as long as everybody's comfortable. And I think everybody in the building is comfortable with what's going on.
My mind just drifted off to the next time we do a live podcast. We need a card.
Someone's going to throw a big goal.
Yes. We need a contest. We need to have a cardboard cutout of you and people throwing big gulps at it. And we can get it on video. And whoever hits you squarely in the face wins a 1 month subscription or something like that.
This feels unnecessary.
Just don't throw big gulps at Paul.
Why
do
you want people to throw
bridge?
Things at me? Yeah. All right. Jay, let's get some people some bar bets and then we'll answer some questions.
Okay.
What do you got? You've got some receiver stats, which will lead us right into our first Twitter question, by the way, which I'm be a nice segue.
So I was wondering, you know, who which Bengals receiver or player has had the best debut game in terms of catches and yards, receiving yards? Jermaine Gresham, 6 catches. That's the most of any Bengal player in his first NFL game. Now you're not going to win a bar bet with that. You might. I mean, there's a good chance of that, but that's not super surprising. Kajana Carter, Tyler Eifert, Jordan Shipley with 5 each. When you get to the receiving yards, most in a Bengals debut, that's where you win your bar bet. Not A.J. Green. He had 41. Everyone remembers 1 catch for 41 yards and a touchdown in his debut game. Chad Johnson didn't catch a single pass in his NFL debut. It was Jordan Shipley in 2010, 82 yards. That's the record for receiving yards by a Bengal in his NFL debut. Second on that list is Peter Warwick with 80. And then if Ja'Marr Chase wants to beat these records or get into at least the top 5 on these lists, it's pretty easy. I mean, you Collinsworth 65, Eddie Brown 58, Darnay Scott 50. I would think if there's an over under on how many yards Ja'Marr Chase has in his first game, I would think it would be in the 60 range if you're setting a line. So that stunned me that Jordan Shipley's had the most receiving yard. Now that was 2010. That was a really bad year, but they still had Terrell Owens. They had Chad that year. And Jordan Shipley somehow came up with 82 in his debut. Only 4 players have ever caught a touchdown pass in their NFL debut for the Bengals, and that was Gresham, Darnay Scott, AJ, as I mentioned before, and Ron Dugans. Wade Russell did it, but he was one of those replacement scabs in 1987.
Wade Russell drop. Wow. Yes.
If you are curious, real quickly, the record, if you want to get super pie in the sky, the record for most receiving yards in an NFL debut by anybody, Anquan Boldin, 217.
That's 217 in his first game.
That's pretty amazing. Lewis Lipp, second on that.
I've heard people make Anquan Boldin comps about Ja'Marr Chase.
There you go.
So perhaps a faster Anquan Boldin, I think, is like one of those draft comps that you get. Well, there you go. Jordan Shipley, by the way, is one of the people forget how good he was as a rookie and how much the arrow was pointing up on him after that really good rookie year. And then he had that catastrophic knee injury, and that was really it. I mean, he just never really recovered from that. And it's hard not to wonder, you know, if where science is now, 10 years later, if they would have been able to get him back to being the same guy he was as opposed to where it was now. And because, you know, That's what happened. But Jordan Shipley, man, he was a hell of a rookie. So there's the list. We've got it. So go win your bar bets and drop some more Wade Russell knowledge on people. All right, let's just take a quick break.
And now, 2 pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, let's blow through some of these Twitter questions because there are a bunch of them. So let's we're going to start with those receivers. The first question comes from, let's see, Hoinky Dory, at Hoinky Dory, looking strictly at good bad plays from our top three wide receivers this past week. Who would you run, pass, or boot? Higgins, Boyd, Chase. What do you got, Jay?
I think I would run with Higgins because he's made some wow ones. Tyler Boyd just is solid. Neither one of them have had the drop issues. They have dropped balls, but not like Chase. And I think Higgins has made a few more splash plays. So I would run with Higgins, pass on Boyd, and I would boot Chase. He's just the drops, the lack of separation. He's got a ways to go still at this point.
He made one play on Wednesday. It was a deep ball that he kind of went up in traffic and came down with it. That was kind of some vintage stuff that you've seen. But he also, for the second straight day, had a drop on the first play of 11s on an easy slant in. I mean, we have seen a lot of drops from him, and I don't know if that will continue, if that's just part of a – I go back to how – I'm not going to say unimpressed, but how – unremarkable T. Higgins was early last year. Now, he had a hamstring, but all of camp it was like, ugh, this guy, I mean, what are we, and even into the early part of the regular season, right? And then all of a sudden he comes on. I think that's standard for some rookies. I mean, I think you get spoiled when you look around and you see the Justin Jeffersons of the world that just take over early, or Anquan Boldin with 217. But, you know, again, I think there's a learning curve, certainly with Ja'Marr Chase there, that he's battling through, and everyone's kind of referenced it. Anytime you ask anybody about it, it's you just got to stay in the books, stay knowing the playbooks, and getting himself to a level where he's playing on instinct out there and not having to think about what he's doing. Because when you're thinking about what you're doing, you drop balls, you run the wrong route, things like that. And so that's part of being a rookie receiver that takes time, and part of why people love sophomore receivers as breakout candidates like T. Higgins this year and what he can be. I would actually run with Boyd. I think he's been solid enough, and I think you could go either way on those two. But yeah, I definitely think Chase has been the one that you're sort of waiting for him to get through these rookie growing pains. All right, question number two comes from our guy, a good friend of the program, Brian, from at Bryanson Bengals. He said, I'm interested in your and Jay's take on Adam Schein's Bengals flu comment about AJ Green, which was followed by Dave Lapham's joke to Lou Anarumo about classifying, quote, loafs as Dunlaps. Are agents advising disgruntled players to give half-assed effort to get off this team? And a conversation followed on Twitter, and he said, talking about Geno, he said, it's impossible to tell with him from the outside because Geno wouldn't talk to the media. I absolutely think the non-vocal stars and passive-aggressive social media BS from Dunlap contributed to the fractured locker room. The Adam Schein Bengals flu, I actually wasn't familiar with it, but Brian sent me, it was a tweet essentially claiming that Peter Schrager must have been at Cardinals camp saying that AJ looks great. And Schein sort of made some comment about, well, he had the Bengals flu the last couple of years. Again, this is, and Schein's actually said very nice things about the Bengals, but this is the type of thing that you get from national folks. And I think this was a symptom of regime change. This was absolutely real. I mean, this is documented. I have written it over and over. We have talked about it both with AJ and Carlos about their frustrations with the new direction here. And we talked about what happened with AJ Green when he didn't get traded in 2019 and the fact that he didn't play the rest of that year with, you know, contracts hanging over his head. We talked about that so much, and there's no reason to relitigate it. And his frustrations last year with how he was being used. He's been vocal about that. Carlos never made any bones about, I mean, he was pretty clear, right? I'm doing whatever I got to do to get out of here. If that means posting the rotations on Instagram, if that means selling my house, saying I'm going to sell my house after a game, it was nuclear method, okay? And people were forced to take sides. That was part of it. And, Jay, we heard Von Bell talk about this. I mean, he said last year there was finger pointing. People felt like they had to take sides. And this was part of why there was a hope for the reset of the culture this year, was all that old stuff, all the people who were the names and the voices of the locker room and the respected people in the locker room have been cleared out. Because you can't have those two sides going against each other. You need everybody that is here and is with it and has been brought in here together without wondering, well, should I lead? Geno's here. I mean, that dude might be in the Hall of Fame, right? You can't have that hesitancy. And when those guys were there, and particularly when there was disgruntled, that does cause finger pointing, division, all that crap that went on. Yeah, I think that's real. I still don't think AJ Green is himself. Maybe he's found it in Arizona. I hope he does. But, you know, I do think that stuff is real in some respect.
Yeah. Well, 2019 AJ, that was a business decision. And he could have come back and he didn't. He saw, like you said, wasn't super thrilled with the new direction, saw how bad the team was. I think the ankle he could have played on, but he just decided that he was not going to play the rest of that year. Last year, I feel like was a little different. He knew in 2019, if not for certain, he had a pretty good idea the Bengals were going to tag him. He's going to get that $18 million. Last year, he was playing for a contract. I don't think he was dogging it. He may not have been super thrilled with the direction and he may have not been mentally bought in, but I don't think his performance last year was related to effort. I think it was related to age. I mean, we saw how mad he got in that Baltimore game in week 5 when he wasn't getting the ball. He wanted the ball. He wanted the stats. He wanted to play for a big contract this year. And yeah, he's made tons of money. He doesn't need the money, but it's still a pride thing with these guys. He wanted to get as much money this year as he could. So I don't think he was out there necessarily, you know, do it the Bengal flu thing. I just think it was a product that he wasn't getting separation. He was getting older. Maybe there were some lingering health issues, but I don't think that was the case. And I certainly don't think agents are in these guys' ears. I think Carlos, AJ, they're grown men. They made these decisions on their own. I don't think it was agents saying, hey, go out and do this. I mean, Carlos has never really had a reputation as a bust your butt kind of guy in practice or in games. And the frustration just boiled over when he got knocked down the depth chart. So different situations, those two. I think AJ was, I think the effort was there last year, just the production wasn't.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think it was a matter of AJ ever dogging it when he was out there. I think he wanted to feel like if he's out there, he'll absolutely go all the way and know he can go all the way and not feel limited by worrying about injury or worrying about business or any of that stuff. And so I think that was part of it, you know. And I mean, Drew Rosenhaus does have a bit of a history of certain players finding using the nuclear method. And I think he's willing to put that out there is you can do this, right? I'm not saying that still, you're right. They are grown men and they make that decision. They all know they can do that. You know, I mean, I think that's always out there, but that's the past. Let's focus on the future. Okay. Next question comes from Governor Chief at Governor Chief. Who are the RB's offensive and defensive players of the camp so far? And he has a side question. If you could add any player on the Bengals to be on your team for a wing eating contest, who would it be? I don't think that's going to be a hard decision, but Who's your Arby's offensive and defensive players of the week? Who's this week's meat mountain, Jay?
I mean, it's tough on offense. We've documented how bad it's been. I guess I would say Joe Mixon. He's just looked really good, and he's not getting tackled. He's not going to the ground. There's only been two practices in pads, but just kind of by default, none of the receivers have looked great. The tight ends are what they are. Nobody on the O-line is going to be up for that award, and certainly Joe Burrow is not going to be up for that award. So I would go Mixon on offense. Defense is a little tougher. Trey Waynes looked good before he had this little hamstring tweak. I think maybe I would go with Chidobe Awuzie there. He has been in this league for a while, but nobody really kind of viewed him as a lockdown corner, a number one corner, and he's looked the part. He has played really, really well, no matter who he's covering in camp. And maybe a slight second would be Von Bell, because he was awful last year in coverage, and he has looked really good playing man coverage this year. And he talked about it, how he went back and watched those games when he got roasted by Mark Andrews and Evan Engram, and really kind of dedicated itself this offseason to getting better in man coverage. And you can see that improvement early on in camp.
Trey Hendrickson
has
been really good. I mean, he has just been disrupting everything. He had the interception where he dropped back into coverage and kind of dropped that little, where'd that guy come from, and made the play, you know? But he has been in the backfield consistently. He's been good against the run. You've seen him, you know, hold the edge nice, extend out and make plays out there. Hubbard has as well. I think both of them, I guess caveats when you're talking about some of the guys they've been going against, but Henderson spent a lot of time going against Jonah Williams too, and had his fair share of dubs. Another guy who there's a question coming about later. I would throw Marcus Bailey in that conversation, who's had some really nice moments, and really spent a lot of time around the ball. And he's spent a lot of his time out there, with the second and third string guys, but we'll get to him again a little bit more later. But those are, along with Chidobe, I would throw those names out there. I agree with you. I think there's a lot of different guys on defense you could talk about that have really been impressive. Okay, next question.
What about the wings?
Oh, I mean Tyler Shelvin.
No,
right?
I mean just on sheer volume, there's more room.
Yeah,
I don't know what his mental makeup is to fight through the fatigue of stuffing yourself. There's plenty of room there for him to put a few away.
Yeah, I feel like he's been in a wing eating contest or two,
maybe by himself.
all right, this one from DB123 or at 9_11 did Bush. Who's winning the kicking battle? Evan McPherson.
Did they kick yesterday? I'm sorry, I wasn't there at practice yesterday.
Yeah, Seibert missed one yesterday. So I mean, McPherson has continued. He's really got the one miss from 60, right? I mean, that's all we've seen thus far. It was on Saturday. He wasn't able to hit from 60, but he's been money everywhere else. McPherson, you know, we said it was going to take him really falling apart this camp to not win. And at this point, all signs continue to be good for him. But it will come down to the preseason. I mean, he's still got to go out there and make a bunch of kicks when the games start. And so that'll be the next big part of this. But he is on a nice pace and certainly a pretty dramatic leader in the clubhouse when it comes to that. This one from at Flava DeV. With the improvements we've made on the defense this offseason and the previous one, which AFC North opponent are we better equipped to defend against? Who are they better equipped to defend against in the North, Jay? Who would you go with?
I would say the Browns, with the receivers they have and the improvements the Bengals have in the secondary. I don't know if you're ever prepared to deal with Lamar Jackson and what he brings. That's a lot of that is on the linebackers, and they didn't make any additions in the linebacker room. That doesn't mean that these guys haven't gotten better, but I think if you're looking at what the Bengals did in the offseason, I think they've positioned themselves better to deal with the Browns. The Steelers are supposedly going to run the ball more this year. I still think there's a big question on what the interior of that D-line is, how effective they're going to be. It is more about the pass rush. They have a lot of big bodies in there, so maybe the Browns the Steelers would be second on that list with all the huge guys like Reeder and Shelvin and Rennell Wren, those guys that Tupo that they can stick in the middle of the line. But I would go for sure Browns just with all the receivers they have and how much better we expect the secondary, particularly the cornerbacks, to be this year.
Yeah, I would also say the Browns. I agree. I think the coverage is better. And when you have that and you're trying to cover all those guys they got over there from Landry and Beckham and everybody else, you know, that's who they are. That's really the going to be the gist of what they do. Obviously, they have Nick Chubb, but that's also where you feel like you have improved with adding more run stoppers there as well. So, I think it's probably the Browns because, you know, the Steelers, the Ravens are just so – I don't know that they're better equipped to handle the Ravens because it's not really about cover or even big guys, right? You know, with the Ravens, it's about tracking Lamar Jackson, and they're kind of the same there. I'm with you. And Pittsburgh, maybe they're better to stop Pittsburgh just because Pittsburgh's not going to be as good. I think Pittsburgh's offensive line is going to struggle, and that's going to be a big part of their storyline this year. But – I think the Browns is the answer to that question. Next, he calls himself Joey Freshwater, which I like that nickname, but Sporps shouting. Secondary making plays, D-line getting the better of the play early on. How are the linebackers looking? Anyone maybe surprising in that room? Here's Marcus Bailey. So I've been really impressed with him. And his story is interesting in that, I mean, Jay, you talked a lot about him, how you had high expectations for him last year once he got over the injury. And it was going to take time. He's had significant injuries. But here he is. He looks over it. I mean, he got a touch of playing time at the end of last year. But he keeps getting his hand on the football. You know, he had an interception basically that he caused whatever day it was earlier this week where he tips the ball up into the air and Ricardo Allen picks it off. He had a strip. He had another play where he kind of got something that got turned into an interception. I just think that was sort of his reputation at Purdue, and it's showing itself now. And I think it makes him one of the most interesting watches for the preseason this year.
That's what I was just going to say. Circle August 14th. There may not be a guy on this roster that was more impacted by the lack of a preseason last year than Marcus Bailey. You didn't get to see any of those rookies last year, what they could do in these games. And he started from behind. I've been high on him. I almost, in my piece earlier this week, I almost made him one of the five risers, but I wanted to give it another week and see if he continued it. And he has. If I'm jotting down players I'm most interested in watching in that game a week from Saturday against Tampa Bay, he's right at the top of that list.
Next question from Kyle Grosser at K Grosser. After the first wave of cuts, do you think the Bengals add offensive line depth? Asked about this yesterday to Zach Taylor and kind of got a lot of the same. We're always looking to improve, but then there was sort of a look, Riley's fine. He's going to be fine. Jonah's still out there. He's fine. Fred Johnson is going to be fine. He's a little bit further off than some of those other guys, but you know, I don't think they think he's not going to be there. And then it was trotted out that, and we feel like we've seen Isaiah Prince hold himself up pretty well. So I don't know about playing the Isaiah Prince card, but fair enough. Look, they should have addressed this a long time ago. This should have been something they have been looking to do. I think they'll have their eyes open to adding another tackle, somebody that can maybe give them some veteran presence once it gets closer. But to me, that wouldn't be after first cuts. That would be after last cuts, I think, is where now, unless an injury happens, then that they would feel maybe more motivated to have to go do something. Something serious happens to Jonah or Riley. But I think for now, they have Fred Johnson, and they feel like you know, see what happens after last cuts and what ends up out there veteran wise in that market, which it's, you know, it ain't going to be pretty. Somebody great ain't going to show up. There's not enough good tackles in this league to think that one's just going to show up, but maybe you can get somebody that you feel like can get you through, a few weeks in case something catastrophic were to happen.
Yeah. I mean, the options weren't even really there in free agency unless you were going to go huge and which they were never going to do and spend a ton of money on a couple of the top end guys. It's just a position that is declining. There aren't a lot of options out there, no matter what time of year it is. And no one's going to trade an offensive lineman. And I don't know. Even with final cuts, I don't know that you're going to see anybody out there that's going to be a vast improvement over what they already have, which is a pretty low bar.
Yeah. This one from George K. Technically George K. Is that four wise? Billy Price, how's he looked? Is it a make or break year for him? Is he at least looked like an NFL player in training camp? He had a couple bad reps yesterday in one-on-ones. Kind of got knocked on his butt by Khalil McKenzie, which isn't a great look, but you know, he's been okay. He hasn't been super noticeable. But again, we're 2 days of guys in pads. So I think he's been fine. And, you know, the question with Trey Hopkins, Trey Hopkins is on pace to be back, and they've been working him in and out sort of in the same way that the discussion happened you heard there with about Burrow, or they're giving Hopkins a day off here and there. They're easing him in to the beginning of camp coming off his ACL, but all expectations are he'll be out there and able to go full game week one against the Vikings. So, you know, Price will be your backup. And it's really hard to make people always want to ask this, and I totally understand it. You know, how's X looked? Well, when you're talking about offensive linemen, you're literally talking about 2 days, and it's hard to really make real judgments on that. So he's had some bad reps, but, you know, honestly, they've all kind of had bad reps. And so I don't know if that makes anybody feel better or totally worse. But
they are comfortable. I mean, Frank Pollock being here, he was largely responsible for bringing Billy here in the first place. They drafted Trey Hill, but they're working him more at guard. Keaton Sutherland has been the one snapping when it hasn't been Billy. I think they're prepared for Billy to be the backup center this year. If anything happens to Trey, it's maybe not an ideal situation to throw him in, but that's the way they're going to go if something does happen where Trey's either not ready or something happens in season.
Last one from Riley Abel. How's the Evans, P. Ryan, Travion, and Puka battle shaping up? First of all, Puka's kind of more into the receiver category at this point. He's sort of a hybrid mix, so I wouldn't lump him in with these guys, and I really wouldn't lump Samaje in. He is Joe Mixon's backup. He's the other big body back. This is more about Evans and Travion. And I mean, you can put P. Ryan in there as a potential, but I mean, I think you're talking about the third down back situation that's open that Gio vacated. And so Chris Evans looks good, man. Like, we've seen him make some plays where you really are seeing why they like him out of the backfield. He really is a nice receiver. He really has natural hands. He seems to be holding up okay in pass pro, but we've only seen a few drills of that thus far. That's really what I'm watching with him. I think I've seen enough and heard enough about him catching the ball. They love him that way. And he's great, you know, when you're sending it all out for Burrow to run that type of offense that he likes. But I'm really interested in what he looks like in pass pro, and that's been okay thus far. It hasn't stuck out as a disaster or anything like that. And Travion's had some moments too. He's had some really nice pass pro reps, and he's had some nice runs. So I don't know, Jay, what do you think? Do you view it that same way?
I do. I mean, he has stood out to me in the run game, but that's not what they need from that position. It's going to be the third down back. It's going to be more about the hands. I don't know that they trust Travion's hands. We've seen him in practices and he doesn't have great hands. He can be electric with the ball. He's super quick. But if you're looking for that third down back, I mean, Chris Evans catches the ball like he's a wide receiver. He just looks so smooth and so sure handed. I think that's what's going to ultimately give him the edge. But I expect Travion to be on the practice squad. And if anything were to happen, one of those three guys, it wouldn't be a disaster to have to stick him in there at some point this year.
And they could keep four running backs. I don't know that that's likely, but I don't think it's totally out of the question. All right, well, let's wrap it up here. We, of course, will be back on early next week, I think Monday, and we will have more from you on this latest three-day burst. We're working in three-day bursts too, right, Jay? So we'll have the latest on you on that and continue to monitor what's happening with Joe Burrow. Of course, you can continue to read all of our stuff at The Athletic, plus everything. Justin Williams killing it as UC starts up their football season, and Trent with all things Reds as they bear down and try to catch the Padres and the Brewers. And all the insights, great this time of year to read all the inside stuff from other places across the league. And track what's going on, including the AFC North. It should be a whip around in our near future, I'd imagine, as we get back into that time of year.
We should, maybe. Yes. We'll after see. The first preseason game would be the ideal time, although it would be the second preseason game for the Steelers who kick things off tonight. But, yes.
Yeah, football this evening, technically. So anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening to hear that podcast ground, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.